This podcast is brought to you by DIA, the trusted global neutral forum for healthcare product development professionals. DIA, driving insights to action.
The familiar expression, "the future is already here," seems particularly applicable to the growing use of artificial intelligence and machine learning in the life sciences industry, including and especially in clinical research, drug development, scientific analysis, and regulatory review. Where does artificial intelligence currently stand? And since we know it won't stand still, where will it take us? I am Alberto Grignolo, editor of DIA Global Forum. Today, my guest is Patrick Brady, Vice President for Regulatory Policy and Intelligence at Bayer. At our DIA Europe 2018 meeting in Basel, Patrick will moderate the panel discussion titled "Exploring the Use of Artificial Intelligence: Trust in Technology or Trust in Each Other?" Patrick, thank you for joining us today and welcome.
Thank you for the opportunity to have this important discussion today. I look forward to the opportunity to get into this topic of artificial intelligence.
Great. So let's begin with the basics. What is the difference, if any, between machine learning and artificial intelligence?
Well, it's certainly an important question, especially these days. I feel like the topic of artificial intelligence is ubiquitous. I mean, it seems I can hardly open up a newspaper or the time to sit down and watch television. I get to a commercial break and there's advertisements and news articles about the topic of artificial intelligence everywhere these days. Certainly, there's a lot of hype and expectations around the topic, but there's very little discussion around what is artificial intelligence. So I think it is an important question. You know, I kind of separate the topic of artificial intelligence really into two different categories. I think there's narrow artificial intelligence and then there's general artificial intelligence. General AI is kind of this idea. It's probably more keen to what people see in, you know, science fiction movies, where there's this ability for machines to apply intelligence to almost any problem, almost in a human-like fashion, being able to apply intelligence to multiple different problems that have different scenarios associated with them. I think this general idea of artificial intelligence is probably a misplaced expectation. Likely what's more appropriate is a definition of AI that's more narrow, that really kind of looks at the statistically oriented kind of computational intelligence methods that are focus more on one narrow task where you have a defined problem where the machine can apply human-like intelligence to that specific problem. Now, the umbrella of artificial intelligence or AI really encompasses, you know, a number of different computational algorithms that might include things like natural language processing or voice recognition or image recognition or even, as you say, kind of machine learning. I think machine learning itself is a subset of artificial intelligence where you could teach the machine through computational algorithms to be able to generate human-like insights from data. But again, this broad general concept of AI where if a computer knows how to play chess, then that must mean that it knows how to do drug development, for example, is really kind of a misplaced expectation. But if you could focus in on a particular example of a problem like adverse event case management and really kind of doing medical coding around that, where you have a very defined process with a kind of systematic number of steps that you follow kind of each and every time, you could really teach a computer or an algorithm to kind of follow that. But the more general, broad categorization, I think, is we're not quite there yet.
Well, you've mentioned adverse event reporting, so let's dive right into the healthcare industry, which has seen an uptake in AI, in machine learning, cloud computing. So can you tell us, what are the pharmaceutical and biotech companies doing today, and what are they using AI for?
Well, you see a lot of experimentation in pharmaceutical research and development today in artificial intelligence. I mean, there's been no shortage of public announcements by pharmaceutical companies towards the research collaborations and the number of experiments that they're doing. Certainly not a scientific study, but just back of the napkin, you know, we've at Bayer tried to take stock or make note of the number of public announcements that have been made by pharmaceutical companies and their collaborations in this space. And there's over half of the top 20 pharma companies, 12 or 13 of the top 20 have at least made public announcements that they're doing work in the area of artificial intelligence and pharmaceutical R&D. And if you look at those public announcements, you see a broad range of activities where companies are experimenting with artificial intelligence-like technologies. You see companies that are using AI in the drug safety space to decrease on the time that it takes them to respond to an FDA safety inquiry by tenfold using AI technology. I think you've seen other pharmaceutical companies that announce research collaborations where they're using AI technology to generate new insights in early in R&D to try to identify potentially new drug targets or potentially new indications for already approved molecules. I think one pharma company has announced that they're working with a AI provider to try to decrease the amount of time that it takes to develop immuno-oncology products. Well, you know, this is an area where it's taking 10 to 12 years to bring them to the market, and they're looking at ways of using insights generated from artificial intelligence-like technologies to shorten the development time there. You see others who are using AI technology to generate internal networks of scientific collaborators, being able to track scientific publications that are showing up in the public domain and matching those publications with internal project teams based upon areas of science in which research is happening, and then connecting these collaborators across the organization using different networks inside the company. So there's a very broad range, both in the pre-market space as well as in the post-market space, where you see AI technology being used. And you know, what's exciting here is that I believe that we're just at the beginning, and that there's still much more to come in this area.
Well, it sounds like from your comments that AI has applications drug life cycle. On the other hand, if we look ahead, do you see any areas of the drug life cycle where the potential for the use of artificial intelligence and machine learning might be greater than in other areas? Or is it pretty much all along the cycle?
I think it's throughout the product life cycle. I think it exists within research and development, pre-marketing, but also on post-marketing. And I see lots of opportunities in the commercial space as well as it relates to managing customer relationships, being able to generate insights from patients based on active online listening and understanding sentiment analysis, and being able to track different ways in which the customer, the patients, the physicians, healthcare providers are actually using the product and making better use of the product in the future. So I really do see really no limitations across the product lifecycle where artificial intelligence technology can be useful here. I think what's important today, though, in terms of setting expectations, is that we have to understand that the idea that we can use artificial intelligence technologies in this broad kind of, you know, magic carpet ride or sprinkling fairy dust on things and having an overnight kind of snap your finger magic solution is really kind of a misplaced expectation, and that there's some commonalities that I see in what would be successful use cases for artificial intelligence today. And some of these things I've already mentioned. I think one is you really need to have a robust and high quality data set where you can apply machine algorithms to that data to generate insights. So a good, clean, high quality data set is an absolute necessity here. And I think this is one reason why, you know, the quote, "it's all about the data," will be an important kind of driver of the future as we get deeper and deeper into the use of artificial intelligence technologies in pharma. So one, it's about the data. The second thing is, in terms of the business case, is really kind of the process. I think today, artificial intelligence technologies are best applied to those areas where you have a well-defined, routinized business process where the steps 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 are highly consistent time and time and time again, so that you're really kind of repeating the same number of tasks over and over again. And this is an area where AI is best utilized. So think about the business process, you're answering a well-defined kind of business question or business challenge, and you're using a highly routinized and well-defined business process, and you're applying the technology to a robust and high-quality data set. Those are the areas all across the pharmaceutical lifecycle where AI will be used first, in my opinion.
You've stressed the importance of a quality data set, and that leads me to ask you the following question. Some people have really mentioned that artificial intelligence, machine learning are interesting terms, but they lend themselves to a degree of hype, and they really should be replaced by the term advanced analytics, which relate to data, the quality of the data set, as you say, and maybe demystify some of the hype that is occurring. Has the time come to drop the term artificial intelligence and machine learning and switch over to something like advanced analytics or something more tangible?
I think it's a good point. I think the terms artificial intelligence or machine learning, these aren't inherently bad phrases or bad concepts. They're just not well understood. I think they just became kind of these, and oftentimes it was because of the exposure that we get outside of the workplace, you know, on Saturday and Sunday, that then carries over on Monday morning to the office, where we have kind of maybe a lack of understanding of what the actual terms mean. And then we try to take what we saw on that 30-second advertisement and apply it to our day jobs, which there's nothing wrong with that, but then that creates kind of these misplaced expectations. So I guess to answer your question, I don't really see anything inherently bad or wrong or even incorrect about talking about it as AI or machine learning. It's poorly understood, and that if we want to be successful here, we need to really kind of as a community take the time to better understand it, and then reset expectations here so that we have a realistic understanding of what it is that we're talking about. If we want to call it advanced analytics, that's fine too, but then I think we also have to understand what that means, just like what we would understand AI to mean. I think at Bayer, one of the ways that we're trying to talk about it really is around just kind of data science, so that you really kind of focus it in on what is it that we're talking about. We're talking about data, and then there's a skill set or there's a science around the different ways in which we can use technology to understand all the different things that data might mean or might tell us. And so it is a science, if you will. And so I've begun to replace AI term with a data science term and saying, you know, what are some data science projects we need to be looking at in order to remain competitive and prepare ourselves for the future?
You mentioned several examples of how industry is using AI in healthcare. Let's turn to the regulators for a moment. Can you comment on how are the major regulatory agencies such as the US FDA, EMA, or PMDA currently responding to this growing use of AI by industry?
Well, I see so far much the same posture among the regulators as I see among industry, and that is a bit of a experimentation mindset and kind of a seeking to understand mindset. I don't see anything so far from regulators where there is a, just kind of a blind acceptance or a blind kind of rejection of these approaches to using computational methods or data science techniques to look at data or to look at questions a little bit differently. In fact, I think there are some examples where US FDA and some regulators in Europe are beginning to experiment themselves in this area. I think I was at a conference last fall in the US where US FDA was presenting some early information where they've done some experimentation in the pharmacovigilance space, whether it's using AI or machine learning or active online listening to monitor for adverse events. And I think what the experience from the FDA has reported there has been that there's some promise here, but it's still early days. And so I think this is still very much consistent with where industry itself is in terms of the experimentation. I know with the panel that we'll have at the Euro DIA meeting in Basel, we'll have the opportunity to hear from some EU regulators about the work that's going on there. And so I won't comment specifically about the experience there, but hopefully we'll have a chance to get more into that topic both at the Euro DIA meeting in Basel, as well as the DIA global meeting in Boston this summer. But I think my general understanding is that the regulators are approaching this still very much with an open mind, kind of a seeking to understand, and they themselves are experimenting with ways in which AI technologies can also help them do the job that they do.
Of course, we might agree that the ultimate beneficiaries of all of these efforts are patients. So in your view, will AI or machine learning or advanced analytics or data science ultimately reach the goal of making patients better faster?
I think it's still to be determined, but I do have an optimistic view. Without a doubt, as an industry, we have a lot to do to better understand the nature of disease. Doubt, I think, using computational methods, we could model disease better in the future and get a better understanding of the pathology of disease. I think we'd better be able to target drug targets for treatment in the future. There's no shortage of information out there about the cost and the time that it takes for us to develop a medicine today. And if artificial intelligence technologies to help us bring down the time that it takes to develop a medicine and the overall cost of drug development, ultimately that means that patients can get medicines faster, that we could be more targeted and better understand the disease that we're trying to treat. And hopefully then treatment could be more accessible and more affordable for the patient. This is still a ways into the future, but I think the business case and the reality of the problems that we're trying to solve, whether it's the scourge of disease or whether it's the cost of development, we ought to be looking at all ways in which we can better answer those questions. And if technology can help us do that, then it's a worthwhile endeavor.
At the Basel Euro meeting, you're going to be chairing a session, as I mentioned earlier, on exploring the use of AI, and particularly the second part of the session titled, Trust in Technology or Trust in Each Other. I wonder if you could unpack that for us a little. Where does this aspect of trust fit into the AI discussions? Trust between whom? Trust for what purpose? What does that mean?
It's an important question, Alberto, and I think the motivator for me and why I wanted to bring this topic of trust into the discussion is because it recenters us on the human element or the human aspect of what we're talking about here. And for me, I think that has a number of veins of thought that really kind of goes with it. The first thing that I want to kind of bring up as we get into this is there's so much talk about how, you know, robots and computers are going to, you know, replace us and take all of our jobs. And it quickly kind of becomes this doom and gloom type of conversation. And so that human element of trust and us trusting each other, it needs to be at the front of that conversation, because I'm not one of these people who buys into the idea that we should be afraid of robots or computers kind of taking our jobs. In fact, if you look at the history of technology, over time, technology creates a lot more jobs than it destroys. Yeah, our jobs may be different in the future, but I think there's going to be a lot more opportunities for us as knowledge workers and for us in pharmaceutical R&D. There'll be more opportunities if we leverage technology to do our work versus if we'd be afraid of technology. So center to that is kind of the trust in what is it that we expect from knowledge workers in pharma R&D in the future? What are the skill sets that we need to have, and how do we prepare ourselves for the future in an era, you know, where new technology becomes even more ubiquitous? I mean, sometimes I kind of comment about the fact that, you know, 15 or so years ago, when I was first kind of coming into the pharmaceutical industry, I remember preparing my resume for a job interview, and I would put on the bottom of my resume, you know, that I was proficient in, you know, the Microsoft Office suite of products, being able to use Word and PowerPoint and, you know, Excel and these kinds of things. That was a big deal, as something that you would profile as a knowledge worker. Well, today, 20 years later, that's an expectation. I mean, it's not so much something that you would tout as a knowledge worker that you have those skills. And so I think what we should be thinking about today is, what are the skills that we need to learn today that 20 years from now will be, or even 10 years from now, will be a mere expectation as a knowledge worker that you bring these skills to the table and you demonstrate an ability to not be afraid of or run away or worry about artificial intelligence-like technologies replacing your job, but figuring out and describing your value and how you actually are able to use and interact with the technology to do the work that we do so successfully. So I think answers in the future will be a commodity. And as humans, where we will set ourselves apart is being able to ask the right questions. So that's the first part where trust comes in. The second part where trust comes in is around the data itself. And us really as humans and as knowledge workers and curators of data, being able to differentiate quote unquote good data versus bad data and understanding the limitations of the questions that we ask. There's been no shortage in our industry where data has been misused, right? And where there's been, you know, motivations, even incentives to look at data and to draw conclusions that may or may not be factual or may not be accurate. And so I think not only trusting in ourselves, not seeing the machine as an enemy, but also trusting in the data and having kind of a common approach to how we think about the data and being able to trust the data and being able to differentiate good data versus bad data, if you will, becomes an important parameter here if we're going to turn over all the information to computer algorithms, if you will. So that's why I think that trust in each other and understanding how we can trust technology becomes a central theme if we think about the human element of this going forward.
You mentioned trust in the data as being important, and we're living in an age where there are a lot of statements made about fake news and perhaps fake data. How can people comfortably trust in data that may not in itself be trustworthy? Are we moving into an era where actually data will have to be hyper-scrutinized in order to be trusted? Is this going to become more complicated before it becomes easier?
I think it'll become more complicated before it becomes easier, and I think there will need to be some scrutiny. I think this is where kind of your data management and your data governance kind of comes into play, and there being some baseline expectations around how we manage and treat data, and then how we answer certain questions, understanding where we are in a space of hypothesis generating versus actually answering the question. So yeah, we'll need to do some work to understand and come to some agreement as a scientific community as to which questions can actually be truthfully answered from a particular data set, and at what point do we actually reach a consensus around what the data actually tell us. So this is going to require some work. I think some areas where we've already gotten into this area, certainly the leading edge of this has been, you know, a topic of discussion over the last 5 to 10 years as it relates to answering safety questions and looking into different databases to answer safety questions. In a similar fashion, you know, industry and as regulators kind of go further down the path of looking at real world data to answer uncertainties around benefit or efficacy, if you will. This is another area that's still to be defined that only, you know, underlines or further emphasizes why we'll need to have discussions as a scientific community around the rules of the road, if you will, and how to understand data and how to understand the advantages as well as the limitations of the technology that we can use to explore that data and generating new insights. So the rules and the methods become very important here to make sure that the data is used in an appropriate and relevant way.
In relation to the fear of technology, if you will, that we discussed a few moments ago, would it be fair to say that as machines become better at learning, humans cannot stop learning? To the contrary, humans need to be able to reinvent themselves in the professional sphere as well as the personal sphere in order to be able to use and leverage the technology to its best and not be afraid of it, but rather transform themselves as humans and get to the next stage, as happened during the Industrial Revolution and at various times in the history of humankind.
I fully agree with what you're saying here, Alberto. Last year, we at Bayer had one of our global regulatory affairs meeting. It's an annual meeting where we get together, you know, the top leaders within the regulatory organization. And we had a guest speaker, New York Times bestselling author, Kevin Kelly. He authored the book, The Inevitables, and it's the 12 technological factors that will shape our future. Mm-hmm. And so he's a bit of a futurist, kind of a technology guy. Some people call him the true most interesting man in the world. I would highly recommend you take a look at the book. But this question came up in the conversation with him about how does a knowledge worker folks like us who are working in pharma R&D, how do we make ourselves either future-proof or future-ready, depending on which way you look at it? You know, if you don't want to become obsolete, what do you have to do to prepare yourself for the future? And his response was just a continuous lifelong learning, just this genuine internal drive towards curiosity and always trying to learn new things. I think the moment that we become stagnant and, you know, refuse to not so much kind of reinvent ourselves, but refuse to kind of learn new things, then that's the moment that we become obsolete. And I think that, as I said, it's not so matter of man versus machine or woman versus machine, but it's how do I define my value relative to what the machine can actually do. And it's almost a matter of, look, if I take stock of everything that I do in my day or in the course of my work, of those things that I do, what are the things that I enjoy the least? And if I could leverage technology to take that work off of my plate, what kind of problems could I solve? What kind of value-added task could I actually take on if I was not doing the work that I didn't want to do anyway, if you will? And I think, you know, when we think about automation and artificial intelligence, I think all of us can take a look at the work that we do today and find ways in which technology can actually make us more valuable as knowledge workers rather than less valuable.
Is this going to be a key takeaway from your session at the Basel Euro meeting, or will there be other takeaways? Just to close out our conversation with some key messages.
Let's leave that to the participants, kind of the audience, to see what's most relevant for them. But I do hope to kind of introduce some of the basic principles around artificial intelligence and the different technologies that are out there, and, you know, reset expectations a little bit. I, you know, as I said, I'm an optimist around artificial intelligence. And, you know, I think that things are evolving here much faster than people realize. But at the same time, I do think there's been a lot of misplaced hype and misplaced expectation, and that actually makes it difficult to do work in this area or to get reasonable kind of investment in this area, because you have to spend a lot of time kind of resetting those expectations. So in addition to introducing some basic concepts, I hope to kind of reset the discussion, reset expectations around what the technology today can actually do versus what we might expect at some point in the future. And then I really think it's imperative that we, from a change management perspective, that as organizations, we really put at the forefront this discussion around impact on people and how we prepare ourselves and prepare our organizations for what's going to be expected for the worker of the future. I think the work that DIA does is important. And I think, you know, not only in terms of convening and being a place and a catalyst for important conversation, but if we focus in on this area, professional development and continuous lifelong learning, I certainly see DIA as being a place where knowledge workers, professionals in R&D should be able to kind of plug in and be able to find a way kind of within the community to, you know, pursue those professional objectives. So I think that that's a reason why that's a relevant topic for this audience, even kind of beyond the, you know, the discussion of the technology itself. So I hope that through the course of the discussion, there's some useful content there that your audience will find, you know, relevant to them, but it also hopefully fits within the sweet spot of what DIA is trying to do for its members.
Well, sounds like a very exciting session. I'll certainly be there. And let me close by thanking you, Patrick, for your wonderful insights and perspectives today. A very exciting topic, and appreciate your joining us. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Alberto. It's a pleasure as always. I'm glad we had an opportunity to catch up again, and I look forward to seeing you in Basel come April.
For DIA Global Forum, I am Alberto Grignolo.
To learn more about this topic, visit us online at diaglobal.org.